It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's yesteryear. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Lipponier. Coming up in this hour, drama, with two episodes featuring the First Lady of the American Theater, Helen Hayes. In a while, we'll hear Hayes as an elementary school teacher and Good Morning, Miss Teichman from 1948. Right now, she's joined by Boris Karloff in an adaptation of Angel Street, better known on the silver screen as Gaslight, from December 8, 1945 on CBS, featured on the Textron Theater.
This is the Textron Theater.
And this is Helen Hayes.
Textron, maker of finest textile products, through the cooperation of America's great retail stores, presents a new radio series of finest plays starring Miss Helen Hayes. And here is Miss Hayes.
Thank you. Tonight's play is Angel Street by Patrick Hamilton. Angel Street was tremendously successful on the stage, both in London and New York, and also in the movies, where it was known as Gaslight. As our guests, we're happy to welcome Sir Cedric Hardwick to play Sergeant Ruff and Mr. Boris Karloff to play Mr. Manningham.
The year is 1880. The city is London, a city where at night it is gloomy and damp and chill, where on the street the gas lamps cast feeble yellow glows curtained in fog, and the houses bulk formless and forbidding and mysterious. This is the story of what happened on one of those nights in one of those houses, a house on Angel Street. But there were many long and dreary nights that led to it. There was, to start with, the night when the housekeeper, Elizabeth, steeled herself to speak to her mistress about a matter which troubled them both.
Mrs. Manningham, you shouldn't sit here alone night after night.
I know, Elizabeth, but my husband has to work at night.
Well, I question it, ma'am. Just what does Mr. Manningham do at night?
I don't know, Elizabeth. I don't know.
And there was the night when Mrs. Manningham screamed.
What's the matter?
Oh, Elizabeth, Elizabeth. Look, I was sitting here reading. I've been reading since 8 o'clock. That's not very long, is it, Elizabeth?
No.
No. And yet my eyes began to hurt. And then suddenly, Elizabeth, I couldn't make out what was on the printed page.
And there was the night after that when Mrs. Manningham told her husband what had happened.
Can you scream for the servant?
Yes, Jack.
Bella, in future, will you kindly remember that you're my wife, and as such, you're not to humiliate us before a servant? You know, of course, what really happened last night.
What do you mean?
I mean nothing. Nothing happened. You imagined everything. I've noticed that you have an imagination, Bella. An abnormal imagination. A sick, diseased imagination, Bella.
And there were all the terrible nights that followed when Mrs. Manningham imagined other things.
Bella, why did you take down this picture?
The picture? I didn't take it down, Jack.
It's down, isn't it? And Elizabeth didn't take it down because I asked her. Bella, confess. Confess the truth. You took down that picture.
No. No, Jack. No, 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 no.
Bella, where is the grocer's bill? I gave it to you, didn't I?
Yes, Jack, it's on the secretary.
It's not here.
It is, it must be.
It's not. Bella, what new trick are you playing on me?
It was there this afternoon, I put it there. This is a plot. This is a filthy plot. You're working against me, it's a plot. Jack, I don't know. I don't know why I do these things.
I do, Bella. Surely you haven't forgotten that... Ah, no, I shouldn't remind you of it.
Remind me of what, Jack? You started to tell me you've got to finish.
Well, Bella, it's just that in view of your actions, I find it strangely significant that your mother died insane.
That was the state of affairs in one gloomy house in the damp and chill city of London on the foggy night in 1880 when Jack Manningham exhibited a curious kindness towards his wife.
I've just thought of something, Bella.
Oh, Jack, what is it? I haven't done anything wrong again, have I?
Now, why should you be apprehensive, my dear? I've thought of something rather nice.
Something nice, Jack?
Yes, I read in the paper that Mr. McNaughton, the celebrated actor, is in London for another season.
Yes, I read that too. What of it, Jack?
What of it? Now, what do you suppose?
Oh, Jack, dear. Do you mean it? Would you take me to see McNaughton? You wouldn't take me to see McNaughton, would you?
I not only would take you to see McNaughton, my dear, I'm going to take you to see McNaughton. That is, if you want to go.
Oh, Jack, what heaven! What heaven!
Well, my dear, you've been very good lately, and I thought it'd be well to take you out of here.
Yes. Oh, yes, Jack, dear, yes. That's what I need, you know, some little change, some attention from you. Oh, Jack, I'd be better. All those ghastly dreads and terrible, terrible fears would vanish, and I could go to bed feeling a normal, happy, healthy human being again. If only you'd be kind to me.
Oh, haven't I just said that I'm taking you to the theater?
Yes, dear, yes, you have. Oh, you've made me so happy, dear. I'm going to the play. Do you understand that, my husband? I'm going to the play.
You seem wonderfully pleased with yourself, Bella. I must take you to the theater more often, if this is the result.
Oh, Jack, I wish you could.
Well, I really don't know why we shouldn't. I used to like nothing so much when I was a boy. In fact, you may hardly believe it, but I even had... Bella. Bella.
What is it? What's the matter? What is it now?
I've no desire to upset you, Bella, but I've observed something very much amiss. Will you kindly rectify it at once when I'm not looking, and we will assume that it has not happened?
Amiss? What's amiss? Jack, don't turn your back on me. What has happened?
You're trying to make a fool of me, Bella. What I refer to is on the wall behind you. Now, if you'll kindly put it back, I'll say no more about it.
The wall behind me? What? Oh, yes. The picture has been taken down again. Yes, the picture. Who's taken it down? Why has it been taken down?
Yes, why indeed? Will you please take it from wherever you've hidden it and put it back on the wall again?
But I haven't hidden it, Jack. I didn't do it. Oh, Jack, look at me. I didn't do it. I don't know where it is.
Then, by heaven, you're mad and you don't know what you do. You unhappy wretch. You're stark, gibbering mad like your wretched mother before you.
Jack, if I am mad, you've got to treat me gently. If I commit these fantastic, meaningless mischiefs that I'm... then I'm certainly going off my head and must be treated kindly and gently so that I may get well. You must bear with me, Jack, bear with me. Not storm and rage. God knows I'm trying, Jack, I'm trying. Please believe me that I'm trying and be kind to me.
Listen to me, Bella, I'm going out.
No, Jack, no.
Yes, I'm going out, and I expect that the picture will be replaced before I return.
Oh, Jack, be patient with me. If I'm mad, be patient with me.
I've been patient with you long enough. The picture is not replaced. While I'm out, you're going to see a doctor, more than one doctor. Think upon that, Bella.
I'll find it, Jack, I'll replace it. Oh, don't go, Jack. Jack!
Well?
You're still going to take me to the theater, aren't you?
No, madam. Emphatically, I am not.
Mrs. Manningham?
Yes, Elizabeth?
There's a gentleman to see you, Mrs. Manningham.
To see me?
Yes.
There must be some mistake. He must want to see Mr. Manningham.
There's no mistake, ma'am.
But at this hour, I don't think I should.
I think you'd better see him, ma'am.
I know you'd better see me, Mrs. Manningham.
Oh, Mr. Ruff, I'll leave you, ma'am.
Oh, no, Elizabeth.
No, I think you'd better leave, Elizabeth.
Yes, sir. I'll be in the kitchen, Mrs. Manningham.
Who are you? Why have you come here at such an hour?
Well, to answer your second question first, madam... I've chosen this precise moment to call because I knew that your husband was out.
Who are you? Are you a doctor?
Nothing so learned, madam. Just a plain police detective.
Police detective? What do you want of me?
I want you to trust me, madam. I have some questions to ask you, and I want you to take a good look at me and see if you're not looking at someone to whom you can give your trust.
I... Won't you sit down?
Thank you. How long have you lived here, Mrs. Manningham?
We bought this house about 6 months ago.
You bought it?
Yes, I had a bit of money. My husband always wanted this house.
You had a bit of money, eh? That's very good. And does your husband always leave you alone like this in the evenings?
Yes.
And does he give you a free run of the whole house while he's out?
Yes. Well, no. Not the top floor. Why do you ask?
Not the top floor.
No, no one goes up there.
Rather funny, hmm?
Funny? I don't know.
I think it is. Now, Mrs. Manningham, to ask a personal question. When did you first get the notion into your head that your reason was playing you tricks?
How did you know?
Well, never mind how I knew. When did it begin?
Only the last 6 months. In this house, things began to happen.
Which are driving you mad with fear?
Yes. Which are driving me mad with fear.
And has the top floor anything to do with it?
Yes, yes, it has. That's how all these dreadful horrors began.
Now you interest me. Tell me about the top floor.
I don't know what to say. It all sounds so incredible. It's when I'm alone at night. I get the idea that somebody's walking about up there. Up there at night when my husband's out.
It never struck you, did it, that it might be your own husband walking about up there?
Yes, that is what I thought. But I thought I must be mad. It was the light, the gas light. At first, when I couldn't see the print upon the page, I thought I was going blind. But then I realized that it was the gas light. Someone had lit a light somewhere in this house, and then this light sank down.
Yes, that's just a question of insufficient pressure. It's the same in my house.
That's what gave me the idea that somehow my husband had come back and was in the attic. Mr. Ruff, always when the light goes up again, 10 minutes later, I hear my husband's key in the lock.
I see. Mrs. Manningham, did you ever hear of Alice Barlow?
Alice Barlow, no.
Alice Barlow was an old lady who died many years ago.
An old lady years ago? What has she to do with me?
A great deal, I fancy, if you'll follow me patiently. Alice Barlow was an old lady of great wealth. It was not my privilege to know her, but it was my duty on just one occasion to see her. That was when her throat was cut open and she lay dead on the floor of her own house.
Oh, how horrible. Do you mean she was murdered?
And the murderer was never discovered. But the motive was obvious enough. Her husband had left her the Barlow rubies, and it was well known that she kept them in her bedroom on an upper floor. In the attic, Mrs. Manningham.
But I don't see...
The murderer seemed to have got in about 10 at night and stayed till dawn. Apart, presumably, from the famous rubies, there were only a few trinkets taken. But the whole house had been turned upside down. The police decided that it must have been a revengeful maniac. I had other theories, but I was a nobody then and not in charge of the case.
What were your theories?
What if the killer didn't find the rubies? What if the only person who could tell him where they were hidden was lying dead on the floor? Can't you picture him, Mrs. Manningham? Searching through the night, ransacking the place hour after hour, growing more and more desperate until at last the dawn comes and he has to slink out into the pale street, the blood and wreckage of the night behind?
Oh, how horrible indeed. And was the man never found?
No, Mrs. Manningham, the man was never found. But do you conceive it possible that he might never have given up hope of one day getting at the treasure which lay there? And how would he do that? Don't you think... Well, what's the matter, Mrs. Manningham?
Quiet, quiet. He's come back. Look at the light. It's going down. Wait. There. He's come back, you see? He's upstairs now.
Dear me, now, how very odd that is. How very odd indeed.
He's in the house, I tell you. You must go. He'll know you're here. You must go.
Quiet, Mrs. Manningham, quiet. You've got to keep your head. Don't you see my meaning yet? Don't you understand that this was the house?
House? What house?
The old woman's house, Mrs. Manningham. This house, here, these rooms, these walls. 15 years ago, Alice Barlow lay dead on the floor in this room. 15 years ago, the man who murdered her ransacked this house below and above, but could not find what he sought. What if he's still there searching, Mrs. Manningham? What if he is up there still searching?
But my husband is up there.
Precisely that, Mrs. Manningham, your husband. You see, I'm afraid you're married to a tolerably dangerous gentleman.
You see? The gas lamp doesn't cast much light in here, either.
This is his bureau?
Yes. And the two bottom drawers are the ones he always keeps locked.
Let's see. Yeah, this is a tough proposition. I may have to force the lock. Well, to work.
Sergeant Ruff, why do you think my husband is...
The murderer of Alice Barlow? Well, madam, one of the acquaintances and relatives that I interviewed after the murder was a young man named Sidney Power.
Power?
Yes, Sidney Power. Conveys nothing to you?
No.
Well, Sidney Power was never a suspect, but somehow I remembered his face. I saw that face again just a few weeks ago. Made inquiries and found that the owner of that face now calls himself Manningham. There we are. First drawer opened. Now, let's see. Not much here. This brooch.
His brooch! And, oh, my watch.
His drawer, huh?
This watch I lost a week ago. My brooch has been missing 3 months. And he said he would give me no more presents because I lost them. He said that in my wickedness I hid them away. Inspector, is there anything else? Is there a bill there? Is there a grocery bill?
No.
Oh.
No, we have to open this second drawer.
Sergeant Ruff, look. Look.
What is it?
The gaslight. It's coming up. He'll be back in 10 minutes. Oh, you must get out of here.
Madam, listen to me for a second. That watch and that brooch, did your husband give those to you?
Yes.
Let me take them.
Here, take them. Take them, but go quickly.
Yes, and you must go quickly, too, to your room. Lock your door and keep it locked. Don't let your husband in, no matter what. Remember, Mrs. Manningham, he's a killer.
Bella, may I ask why you had this door locked?
Oh, I came up to bed and locked the door.
You came up to bed?
Yes, Jack.
Then may I ask why you are still completely dressed?
I don't know.
You don't know? Do you know anything about anything you do?
Yes, Jack.
Yes, Jack. Bella, did you replace the picture that I told you to replace?
No.
Bella, did you even look for the picture?
No. Yes.
Where did you look for it? Did you look for it in my bureau?
No, Jack, no.
Then why has the lock on the drawer been forced?
I don't know, Jack.
Now listen to me. Your dark, confused, rambling mind has led you into playing some pretty tricks tonight, has it not?
My mind is tired. I want to go to bed.
Your mind indeed is tired. Your mind is so tired that it can no longer work at all. You do not think, you dream. Dream all day long. Dream everything. Dream maliciously, incessantly. Don't you know that by now?
Dream? Are you saying I've dreamed all that happened tonight? Oh, God, have I dreamed?
What was this dream of yours, Bella?
I dreamed of a man.
You dreamed of a man, Bella? What man did you dream of,
pray? A man. A man that came to see me. Oh, let me rest.
You gibbering wretch. I want to know more about this man. Do you hear? Do you hear me?
I dreamed.
Was I any part of this curious dream of yours, Mrs. Manningham?
Oh.
May I ask who the devil you are?
Me? Oh, apparently I am a mere figment of Mrs. Manningham's imagination.
Don't you think you'd better explain your business, sir?
Well, as a mere ghost existing only in your wife's mind, I can hardly be said to have any business. But perhaps if we went downstairs and let your wife get some rest, perhaps I could think of one or two curious things to tell you, sir.
Now then, sit down. Are you going to tell me your business, or am I going to fetch a policeman and have you turned out?
Ah, an admirable idea. Fetch a policeman, Manningham. Oh? Why do you wait?
Alternatively, sir, I can turn you out myself.
Yes, but why not fetch a policeman?
You give me the impression, sir, that you've got something up your sleeve.
Excuse me, Manningham, but do you notice the same thing I do?
Notice what?
That the light is going down in this room.
The light?
Yes, surely there. Ah, eerie, isn't it? Well, now I can talk freely.
Are you off your head, sir?
No, sir, just an old man seeing a ghost.
What ghost do you see, pray?
Why, it's the ghost of a woman, sir. An old woman who once lived in this house. Yes, in this very house. What things I imagine.
What are you saying?
Remarkably clear, I see it, sir. An old woman getting ready to go upstairs to bed at the end of the day. Why, there she is, look. She sits there, just there. Now it seems I see another ghost as well. I see the ghost of a young man, Mr. Manningham. A young man with murder in his eyes. Why, bless my soul, he might be you, Mr. Manningham. He might be you.
What's your game, sir?
And then I see the same man years later ransacking the house, ripping everything up, madly seeking the thing he cannot find. Oh, by the way, Manningham, have you ever seen this brooch?
You know I have. I gave that to my wife.
And I know something else about this brooch, Manningham. I know it was on the list of articles stolen from that woman's house the night she was murdered.
You seem, sir, to have some very remarkable information.
It's more remarkable than you realize, Mr. Manningham. For instance, did you realize that this brooch has a secret catch that opens a hidden compartment? Yeah, it has, truly. You just press here and... you see? And what have we here, Mr. Manningham? The Barlow rubies.
What?
There you are, sir. You killed one woman for those rubies and tried to drive another out of her mind. And all the time they lay in your own bureau drawer. And all that they've brought you is a rope around your neck, Mr. Sidney Power.
Do you imagine you're going to leave this room with that information in your possession?
Do you imagine, sir, that you are going to leave this room without suitable escort?
May I ask what you mean by that?
Only that I have men in the house already. Didn't you realize that they'd signaled their arrival from above, your own way in, when the lights went down? Suppose we open the door and see if I'm not right. Come in, gentlemen. All right, boys.
Inspector. Inspector Ruff.
Mrs. Manningham.
Inspector, I want to speak to my husband.
Very well, my dear. What do you want to say?
I want to speak to him alone.
Alone?
Yes, alone. Won't you please let me speak to him alone? I beg of you to allow me. I'll not keep him long.
Well, I don't quite understand. Alone, huh? Oh, very well. This is anything but in order, but we'll wait outside. I'm afraid you must not be long, Mrs. Manningham.
Jack, what have they done to you? What have they done to you?
It's all right, Bella. Oh, you're clever, my darling, terribly clever. Now get something to cut this rope. I can get out by way of the dressing room window and make a jump for it. Can you fetch something?
Yes. Yes, I can get something. What can I get?
There's a knife on the desk. Quick. Can you get it, Bella?
Knife? Yes, I'll get it for
hurry,
you.
Hurry. Quick and get it. That's right. Good. Cut me loose, Bella. Quickly, dear. Use the knife. Quickly.
Knife? What knife? Are you suggesting that this is a knife I hold in my hand? Have you gone mad, my husband?
Bella, what are you up to?
Or is it I who am mad? Yes, that's it. It's I. Of course it was a knife. Oh, dear, I've lost it, haven't I? I'm always losing things and I can never find them. I don't know where I put them.
Bella!
I must look for it, mustn't I? Yes, if I don't find it, you'll lock me in my room. You'll lock me in the mad... house for my mischief. Oh, where could it be? Where shall I look? The desk. Perhaps I put it in the desk. No, it's not there. How strange. Oh, but here is a grocery bill. See, I've found it at last, you see. But it doesn't help you, does it? And I'm trying to help you, aren't I? To help you escape. But how can a mad woman help her husband to escape? What a pity. If I were not mad, I could have helped you. If I were not mad, whatever you had done, I could have pitied and protected you. But because I am mad, I've hated you. And because I am mad, I'm rejoicing in my heart, without a shred of pity, without a shred of regret, watching you glow with glory in my heart.
Barbara.
Inspector! Inspector! Come and take this man away! Come and take this man away!
You have just heard Helen Hayes, Sir Cedric Hardwick, and Boris Karloff in Angel Street.
The Textron Theater, on 2 and 2 yesterday from December 8, 1945 on CBS. Helen Hayes, the star, who at the same time was starring in the Rodgers and Hammerstein comedy play Happy Birthday, running for 563 performances, and would net Helen Hayes one of two Tony Awards for her appearances on the stage. It's an hour of drama on 2 and 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now another broadcast with Helen Hayes. It's the Cavalcade of America with the story Good Morning, Miss Teichman, from February 2nd, 1948 on NBC.
The DuPont Cavalcade of America, starring Helen Hayes.
Good evening, this is Helen Hayes. I'm sure you'll enjoy our cavalcade tonight, an original radio play by Frank Gabrielson called Good Morning, Miss Teichman.
Good morning, Miss Teichman.
An original radio play for the DuPont Cavalcade of America, starring Helen Hayes as Miss Teichman.
Sail on, O Union, strong and great.
Louder, please, John.
Humanity, with all its fears, with all the hopes of future years.
Don't be afraid of it, John.
He's hanging breathless on thy face. Is that all you mean, Miss Teichman?
She is a teacher, this Miss Teichman. A grammar school teacher, Joanna Teichman, teaching 7B in a neighborhood school. She is, say, 60 and gray. But she stands straight as the shortest line between two points. And she knows, as we know our mothers and our bank accounts, subjects, predicates, objects, and the dangling participle. She knows when Vicksburg fell, how high the Andes are, and the names of all the capitals of the states. She knows Huck Finn and Hiawatha, and can begin when in the course of human events, and say the entire declaration. Besides this, Miss Teichman knows, each year, the names, the faces, the abilities, and worths of a brand new class of 40.
Good morning, Miss Teichman.
Good morning, class.
But what do we know of Miss Teichman? We were all one of those classes of 40 once under Miss Teichman, or Miss Levy, or Mrs. Miller, or Mr. Jones. We spend as much time with them as with our parents, almost. And owe them as much, almost. But what do we know of Miss Teichman? Suppose we were ordered to write a composition called Miss Teichman, a Teacher.
Take pen and paper, please. Now write.
Miss Teichman lives in a lower flat at 311 Cheney Street. She lives with her mother, an old lady. Every school day, Miss Teichman gets up early and marks papers. Some teachers do this the night before, but Miss Teichman thinks it is healthy to get to bed early.
Breakfast, Joanna.
All right, Mother. I'll mark the rest of these before class.
Oh, fail them all. That's the way they'll all end up.
Not this class. They're the brightest I've ever had.
Oh, you say that every year.
Are you through with the newspaper, Mother?
Yeah, I don't know why I ever read it. Between the Russians and the high prices, it certainly don't give me any pleasure. And there's 4 new cases of infantile paralysis.
Where?
There, on the front page.
I meant where in the city?
Well, 3 of them are in Southside High.
I found it.
The other's in Manlius Street.
Right next to us.
How many cases are there in your school now?
Still 3. Well, here's something in the paper about Charles Oram. He's getting an honorary degree at the university today. Isn't that splendid?
Joanna, when is Mr. Kraft leaving?
As soon as the Board of Education picks a new principal to take his place.
Think they'll pick you?
For principal? Of course not.
Well, why shouldn't they? You passed the principal's examination years ago, and you've certainly had enough experience.
That's one reason they'd never picked me. I've had too much experience. Anyway, if the Board of Education wants me, all they have to do is ask me. But I'm quite sure they never will.
Did you ask Mr. Kraft to recommend you?
No, I didn't.
Too modest, I suppose.
I've been at Robert's school 38 years, Mother. If the board wishes me to become principal, they have only to appoint me. They know that. I shall certainly not humiliate myself by begging for the job.
Pride killed a cat, I always say.
Curiosity killed the cat, Mother. Hmm? Pride goeth before a fall.
Oh.
Well, I must go or I'll be late. Do you mind if I cut this out, this clipping about Charles Oram? Oh. There's nothing on the back but the comics.
Go ahead. I always read the comics first thing.
Come to attention, please. Class stand. The Pledge of Allegiance.
On Monday morning, September 8th, 1910, when Joanna Teichman, fresh from normal school, stood face to face with her first class in this same sunny classroom, some few of all the facts she taught in 1910 were different than they are today.
The ruler of the Russian people is called the Tsar.
The population of Los Angeles is around 300,000. Its principal industry is foundry and machine shop products.
Marconi's experiments with a wireless may be a step towards the unification of all nations because its vast possibilities of communication will bring understanding to all people and hence put an end to war.
Yet, for the great part, what young Miss Teichman taught us then, old Miss Teichman teaches our children here today.
How do you find the area of a circle, Johnny?
Pi r squared.
And what is pi, class?
3.1416.
This is pi. This is Archimedes, Euclid, Einstein. This is the straight line between two points of thinkers, from the first man thinking to the last man thinking. The straight line and the circle. This is teaching.
Will the first 2 rows take positions at the blackboard, please? What's going on there?
Edward and John are fighting.
Edward! John! Come to my desk, please. Have either of you any explanation to offer for fighting in class?
Ed hit me first, Miss Teichman.
Did you, Edward?
Yes.
Why?
I wanted to, that's all.
I'm sure you had a reason, Edward.
Oh, he made fun of me.
How?
I won't tell.
What did you say, John?
Nothing.
You did, too. You said my clothes didn't fit good.
Well, what's that to get sore about? You can't help it if they don't fit. Everybody knows you get your clothes from the son of that man your father's chauffeur's.
You shut up or I'll punch you in the mouth.
Edward, John. Oh, I am deeply disappointed in both you boys. You're 12 now, Edward. You're in the 7th grade. You're old enough to know better than to start fighting in a classroom, regardless of what John says to you. You'll remain after school every day for the rest of this week.
Yes, Miss Titan.
And about you, John, I'm even more disturbed.
Oh, he hit me first.
After you tried to make him feel inferior because his clothes aren't like yours. I don't like seeing any American, or anyone for that matter, making fun of another person because of his clothes or his family's position or his nationality. In addition to remaining after school every day for the rest of the week, as Edward will, I have a newspaper clipping here I wish you to read to the class.
Out loud?
If you will, please. Class, return to your seats, please. Now, this is an editorial I cut from the Morning Herald to read to you as part of our current events work. But I'd rather have John read it now. I think you'll all see why. You may begin, John.
Deserving laurels. Today, our university is conferring an honorary degree upon a former resident of this city. As a delegate to the United Nations, Charles Francis Orham is now a world figure. But many of us can remember the days when he was a struggling young lawyer in our midst. Out on University Place, there are families who can still recall how he tended furnace for them when he worked his way through college. And one or two of us on this paper can even bring to mind that it was Charles Francis Orham, aged 11, who in 1913 won the Herald's Newsboys Prize for selling the most papers. In honoring him, the university is honoring also what we like to think of as the American way. We are reminded anew that opportunity for all is more than just a phrase.
What the paper doesn't say is that that man used to be one of my pupils. John, can you guess what desk he sat in?
Edwards?
No, John. Yours. And I hope in the future you'll try to make as good use of it as Charles Orham did.
I will, Miss Teichman. Honest, I will. And I'm sorry I said what I did, Ted. His clothes really fit swell.
I'm sorry I belted you.
Shake hands now. Take your places at the blackboard.
This, too, is teaching. To teach Protestant, Catholic, Jew, the native-born, the immigrant, rich, poor, the Methodist and Seventh-day Adventist, the boys who wear buttons for the candidates their parents prefer, Republican and Democrat. All this human tangle needs to know the straight line between two points, between aspiration and result, in this democracy.
You're listening to an original radio play, Good Morning, Miss Teichman, starring Helen Hayes on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company, makers of better things for better living through chemistry. The narrator is relating for us a few simple instances in the daily life of a very important member of the American scene.
She is a teacher, Miss Teichman, a grammar school teacher. Joanna Teichman, teaching 7B in a neighborhood school.
Now there will be a test.
No
comments, please. Now we will have a test in geography. I have written the questions on the blackboard here beneath this map. You will have 30 minutes in which to answer them. Take pen and paper and begin.
Now there will be a test in geography. Now there will be a test, 7B. You will have 30 minutes in which to answer. You will have a lifetime, too, for answering. This test goes on. Can you find Nagasaki on the map? Can you find Lake Success? You have 30 minutes, class, in which to answer. You have a lifetime. And no more.
Keep your eyes on your own paper, please.
Now as the 40 pens of 7B put answers on an empty page, and the wall clock ticks, the door swings open, and Miss Henry, who teaches 7A, appears and beckons to Miss Teichman.
May I see you a minute, Miss Teichman?
Well,
I knew you were having a test. I thought you could step outside for a minute and keep an eye on your class through the glass.
If I come out, I shall not spy on them through the window, Miss Henry. Platt, I'm leaving the room for a few minutes. During that time, you're on your honor not to talk or look at one another's papers. Is that clear?
Yes, Platt.
You trust your class more than I do mine.
What do you want, Miss Henry? I don't like to be out of class too long.
Oh, don't worry. I can see every one of them from where I'm standing. Uh-oh. There's a boy in the back row who's...
I prefer not to hear it, Miss Henry. The honor system binds me as much as it does them.
Oh, it's all right anyway. He was only turning around to pick up an eraser he dropped.
What was it you wanted?
Well, while my group was taking art class, I stopped around at the principal's office, and I got talking with his secretary. And we decided something very interesting.
Really?
You'll say really when you hear. It's about you.
Oh, is it?
We think you're quite likely to be the new principal.
What makes you say that?
Well, you're eligible. You've got a fine record. And there just aren't many good people available. Most of us haven't got the educational requirements the way you have.
Well, then this is just supposition on the part of you and Genevieve.
No, it's not exactly supposition. I happen to know that Mr. Kraft is sending for you sometime this afternoon.
That could be about anything.
Well, he's also been talking with the Board of Education. Genevieve didn't know exactly what went on, but it was something about a new principal. And she knows it's going to be decided today. And you're seeing him today, so...
It doesn't prove anything.
Oh, come now. Who deserves it if you don't?
I like to think I do. But I know there are plenty of other teachers who deserve it.
Miss Teichman?
Have you finished already, Helen?
No, my neck hurts.
Where, Helen?
Right back here. It hurts when I turn my head.
Have you been in a draft?
I don't think so.
Has anyone been talking to you about why it's bad to have a stiff neck, Helen?
You mean about the infantile paralysis?
Yes, Helen.
But I've got a stiff neck, Miss Teichman. I'm not making it up. Honest. Oh, it hurts.
Helen, you go downstairs now and tell the nurse about this.
I've got paralysis, Miss Teichman.
No, dear. You've just got a stiff neck. Go on now. There's nothing to be afraid of.
But what about my chest?
You can make that up later.
Yes, Miss Teichman.
Do you think it's her neck that's bothering her, or her imagination, or the test?
We'll just have to see what the nurse has to say.
Well, don't worry. There's nothing you can do about it.
I know. Well, I must get back.
You should. That boy in the back is turning around again. And this time, I don't think he's dropped an eraser.
Miss Teichman... Joanna Teichman, teacher of 7B at Roberts School, at 3:44 this afternoon sits waiting outside the office of the principal. Beside her is a case of trophies, silver cups and statuettes of bronze. One marked 1921 reminds Miss Teichman of Fred Bettinger, who won the 50 and the 100-yard dashes both that year. As she sits waiting for the principal, Miss Teichman wonders what has become of Fred Bettinger.
Mr. Kraft, we'll see you now, Miss Teichman.
Thank you.
Oh, there's a man in there from the Board of Education who seems very anxious to talk to you, Miss Teichman.
Well, I'll go in now. I believe you wish to see me, Mr. Kraft?
Oh, yes, yes. Come in, Miss Teichman. This is Mr. Grant.
How do you do, Mr. Grant?
Miss Teichman, hello.
Sit down, won't you, Miss Teichman?
Thank you.
The Board of Education has sent Mr. Grant here. He wanted to meet you.
I understand that you're the senior teacher in the school.
Next year will be my 39th year, if I'm here.
Oh, you'll be here, Miss Teichman. Mm-hmm. Particularly these days, we need people with your experience. I'm probably going to be after you with questions all day long at first.
I don't understand.
Well, there's so much I'll need to know about the place.
Mr. Grant is to be the new principal.
I see.
And since you are the senior teacher, I felt I ought to meet you before the others. I'm going to need a lot of help from you, Miss Teichman.
I'll be glad to do whatever I can, Mr. Grant.
With cooperation like yours, Miss Teichman, we can't fail to have a thriving school.
I'm sure we will, Mr. Grant.
Well, I don't think Mr. Grant wanted any detailed information today, Miss Teichman. It's really a matter of getting acquainted. Isn't that so, Grant?
That's right. Just so long as I can feel free to call on Miss Teichman for assistance from time to time.
Oh, yes, of course, Mr. Grant. Well... there isn't anything further you want. I should get back to my room. I have some tests to mark. Goodbye, Mr. Grant.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Kraft.
Goodbye.
On Monday morning, September 8th, back in 1910, young Miss Teichman faced the world in her first class with apprehension, determination, and infinities of hope. On Monday afternoon, February 2nd, 1948, old Miss Teichman sits in the presence of a ticking clock and two recalcitrant boys. Under a column of 38 years, she draws a line and is, for once, uncertain of the sum.
It's 4:30. Edward, you and John may go now.
Thanks, Miss Teichman.
Yeah, thanks.
I do not like yeah, said in my classroom, John.
I'm sorry, Miss Teichman. See you tomorrow.
Goodbye, boys.
Goodbye, Miss Teichman.
From 1910 to 1948, and underneath the straight line drawn, what is the sum? What is the sum?
Oh, dear.
Hello, Miss Teichman.
Hello. Can I do something for you?
I guess you don't remember me, do you, Miss Teichman?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Well, this is a sort of a blow to my pride, Miss Teichman. I used to sit at this desk right here. But I guess a lot of kids have sat here since. You can't be expected to remember us all.
I used to think I could. I guess I'm getting old.
Oh, not you, Miss Teichman. Well, you couldn't possibly know me. After all, in 30-odd years, a man does change.
If it was that long ago and you sat at that desk, you must be...
That's right. Charlie Oram.
Charlie Oram.
I was taking a walk through the old neighborhood. I couldn't go by without coming in to say hello.
How good of you to come, especially at this time. But how awful I didn't recognize you. It's inexcusable. Why, I've seen your picture in the paper at least once a week lately.
Oh, you couldn't recognize anybody from those pictures, Miss Teichman.
I don't think I ever really associated the pictures with you anyway. Whenever I thought of you standing up in the United Nations and talking to all those great men, I somehow always saw you as a 12-year-old boy whose hair wouldn't stay combed.
And now there's no hair to comb.
Still making jokes all the time, I see, Charles.
I need to these days.
Oh, I wish the class were here to see you. You know, we read about you this very morning in the paper. If you only knew what an inspiration a success like yours is to the girls and boys.
I hope it is a success.
Why, Charles, you're a great man now.
I don't feel that way when I think about the United Nations.
You have great responsibilities, I know, Charles, but I don't worry about you not being able to handle them.
You told me that once before I pitched a ball game.
And you won, didn't you? And you'll win in whatever you're doing now. I know you will, Charles. You're that type of boy. I don't suppose you'd want to come in and talk to the class for a few minutes tomorrow, would you?
Oh, I'd like to very much, Miss Teichman, but I'm taking the plane out tonight.
Yes. You don't mind if I tell them about your coming to see me? It makes me very proud.
Mm-hmm. Tell them about the time you caught me smoking in the cloakroom.
So you remember that, do you?
It's amazing how much I remember of what went on. And the older I get, the more complicated my life becomes, the more sense the simple, fundamental things you taught us seem to make. Now, I don't mean just the history and the arithmetic and the grammar. I mean the way you made us feel about life, Miss Teichman. The truth. The most important thing in the world. And if we were right, we didn't need to be afraid of anything.
We don't, Charles.
I remember there was a poem you had us learn. Something about somebody building a ship.
The building of the ship.
That's it. I always liked it. Not that it's exactly Shakespeare, I suppose.
Naturally not. It's Longfellow.
Anyway, it has a feeling of courage in it that always excited me. How'd it go? Thou too, sail on, O ship of state, sail on, O union strong and great, humanity with...
Don't be afraid of it, Charlie.
With all its fears, with all the hopes of future years, is...
Hanging
breathless on thy fate. Sail on, nor fear to breast the sea.
Our
hearts, our hopes are all with thee.
our hearts, our hopes, our prayers, our tears, our faith triumphant o'er our fears, are all with thee, are all with thee.
Thank you, Helen Hayes. We've invited many teachers to listen to tonight's broadcast, and we welcome their comments concerning our play, Good Morning, Miss Teichman. And, of course, as every week, we welcome and appreciate the letters from all Cavalcade listeners. Just address your letters to the DuPont Company, Radio Section, Wilmington, Delaware.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Cavalcade of America on Tuned to Yesterday, featuring an all-star cast from February 2nd, 1948 on NBC. And that wraps this hour of drama featuring Helen Hayes on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.